Hi and welcome to another podcast from The Human Diver, where we are looking to apply counter-errorism techniques in diving. By that we mean human factors and non-technical skills. Our goal is to give you the knowledge and skills so that your dives are safer and more enjoyable. The podcast consists of audio blogs which have been published on our website. Show notes will be provided so you can dig deeper if you want. Ready to jump in? It was 4 a.m. and I woke up with a dull pain in my left forearm and pins and needles in my left hand. Bugger. That day I had completed two dives, the first to a max depth of 44 meters with an average depth of 38 meters for 27 minutes and completed 31 minutes of deco using 50%. The second was to a max of 26 meters, average 23 meters for 43 minutes and a minimum deco ascent with deco clearing at 6 meters. Surface interval was 3 hours, an uneventful pair of dives from a decompression point of view. The previous day, Tuesday, I had not dived. The day before that, Monday, I only did 50 minutes at an average of 21 meters with 10 minutes on 100% oxygen at 6 meters. For those who are looking for a reason as to my bend, sorry, I don't have one. And to be honest, the mechanism and causality for the bend is uninteresting to me in this particular case. Neither of the hyperbaric doctors here in Stromness could explain it either. Rather, this blog is more about the decision-making processes that happened after I woke up, because I believe that most divers go through the same processes, and this needs to be discussed as it has an impact on the efficacy of hyperbaric treatment, and there is still a stigma associated with having a DCS event that needs to be changed. So there I was, awake at 4 o'clock in the morning thinking that I should do something about this. I wondered about the profiles we had dived, thinking that there must have been something there, something that would be picked up by the diving community as being substandard. I wasn't that bothered about missing the wreck diving, even though it was the centenary of the scuttling of the German high seas fleet in Scapa Flow. Following lots of internal monologue, tossing and turning, I got up at 4:45 and took 600 milligrams of ibuprofen as I thought that might dull the pain and then I could go back to sleep. I then call the chamber in the morning as 4:45 is a pretty unsocial time to call the doctors out. As I took the tablets out of the foil pack, I noticed that the pins and needles were very noticeable in my thumb and fingers, except my pinky finger. Yeah, I am not really bent. At 5:15, I made the decision to get out of bed and get dressed. I had decided that I was going to call the chamber and would do it while walking to the hyperbaric chamber in Stromness, which is about a 5 or 10 minute walk from where the boat was moored up. I called the 24-hour medical helpline and was put through to the on-call diving doctor who said he would meet me at the surgery. This is about halfway between the boat and the chamber. When I arrived, we started the assessments, which culminated in power or strength tests to compare my left and right hands. Three specific tests identified that there was an asymmetry between the left and right hands, and having ruled out other potential contributory factors, we decided that DCS was the most likely cause, and we drove up to the chamber. I let the skipper know that I wasn't going to be at the dive brief and what was happening. However, I omitted to let the team know, partly I think because I was embarrassed as we had already had one diver taken to the pot earlier in the week for another undeserved hit, a skin bend this time. The treatment team were called in and I went into the chamber shortly after 7 o'clock. I came out at 10 to 12, having been to 18 meters on 100% oxygen and followed the standard table 6 profile. I was told the BIBS masks wouldn't be comfortable. This wasn't an issue for me because I had used similar military aviation oxygen masks plenty of times during my flying career in the RAF. During both the first and second air breaks, the power tests were conducted by the tender. During the first break, there was a slight improvement from the surface test, but during the second, the improvement was very much marked, and it was decided we would continue with a standard table 6 rather than an extended version. After 4 hours 45 minutes, I emerged from the chamber with my hand all working well and no pins and needles present. The decision-making and biases present in my behaviour. There is almost no human action or decision that cannot be made to look flawed and less sensible in the misleading light of hindsight. It is essential that the critic should keep himself constantly aware of the fact. Anthony Hidden QC, Clapham Junction Inquiry. After the event, it is so much easier to join the dots, links that appear obvious afterwards, but are not seen during the activity. The following will look at my decision-making and why my odd behaviour was predictably irrational. To start with, many of the risk-based decisions we make are not real risks, quantifiable values, but rather uncertainties. There is an important difference. Risks can be dealt with via logic. Uncertainties are often dealt with by emotions, biases and heuristics, mental shortcuts, and as such might appear illogical in hindsight. Lying in bed, I knew something wasn't right. I was looking for reasons why it wasn't a bend or a way to delay the decision. Had I slept on my left hand and it was severe pins and needles? If I waited, would it go away? The stigma associated with being bent is very real, even for someone like me who knows about the topic. I believe that taking the ibuprofen at 4:45 was a way of me trying to find something to say it wasn't a bend or to delay me calling the chamber or reducing the step from all is okay to oh bugger, I have a bend, in the same way that PACE provides an escalation process to improve assertiveness. I was also worried about whether someone would criticize the profile I had dived. The profile for a Tech 1 ratio deco dive, average 39 meters, 30 minutes bottom time, would have meant around 20 minutes of deco, but we had actually done 31 minutes. iDeco gives 26 minutes with a gradient factor of 20:85. In reality, I had no reason to worry about that, but the perception was there. As I said above, I wasn't bothered about missing the diving. Yes, it would cost me in terms of money, but I know that is replaceable. What I think I was more worried about was reputation. How can someone who is relatively experienced and well-trained get bent, especially someone so focused on safety? Ironically, it was this that turned me around. I strongly believe in the walk the talk, and if there is an issue, it needs to be raised. I have relatively thick skin, however, it still took me 75 minutes to come to the decision. Something that I believe also influenced my slow decision-making process was that I was on my own in my cabin. Despite being the scuttling week, our boat had a few spaces, which meant that everyone had a cabin to themselves. If someone else had been in the cabin, I am sure the decision would have been made much sooner and made by the other person. Trading one. Guaranteed. Small loss against a potential major loss. In 1979, Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky published a paper on prospect theory, which ultimately led to Kahneman winning the Nobel Prize for Economics. Unfortunately, Tversky had passed away, and the prize is not awarded posthumously. One of the concepts within this is that we prefer situations which have higher levels of certainty than uncertainty, even if the uncertain situation has the potential for a much greater loss. For example, in the case of a diver I know, missing 6 dives on a 9 dive trip because they were bent early on is a definite small loss, but if something really serious were to happen to them, such as quadriplegia, if they went diving without treatment, it would be a major loss, even though the probability is less certain, should the diver have gone diving, even if they took a day off. The likelihood variable is driven by your availability bias. If we don't know about such major negative outcomes occurring, we don't think they happen. Other examples of this include why divers don't service their equipment when they should, costs money, or lost time to go diving, compared to a potential equipment failure in the future. Why divers are not as fit as they could or should be, loss of time or money now to get fit, compared to a potential cardiovascular issue in the future. Why divers buy equipment to make up for technical and non-technical skills shortfall, investment in time and money is less for equipment than skills development, compared to the likelihood of needing to use skills to solve problems. This bias leads to normalization of deviance, where successes in the past despite drift from safe procedures infer success in the future, and the drift is further reinforced. The cost now is the effort to go back to a baseline and to lose the efficiencies which have been created, compared to the loss in the future when something might go wrong. You can read more about prospect theory in Kahneman's book, Thinking, Fast and Slow. During the Facebook discussions which came about after I posted my account in the Human Diver Facebook group and via PMs, more information came to light of diving professionals who get bent but don't present to a chamber to get treated, and even some who treat themselves with their own hyperbaric chambers. This underreporting or non-reporting aligns with previous data I collected, which showed that a large proportion of diving instructors who had suffered from DCS had not reported to a chamber. I can see multiple reasons for this. The simplistic view that instructors who get bent are not good instructors. Ironically, you'd expect instructors, especially tech instructors, to get bent because of the exposures they have. This is no different to rugby players tearing muscles or breaking limbs. There is criticism levelled at divers and instructors who are quite happy with being good enough, but haven't been given the tools, practice or knowledge to understand where their shortcomings are. Unfortunately, DCS provides that realisation when buoyancy control is not good enough. If an instructor is treated in a chamber, they are potentially off work for 4 weeks, which is lost revenue. Less scrupulous instructors can use the bend as evidence of incompetence by the bent instructor to promote their own diving business. Distancing through differencing is the tendency for people, following a major accident, to look for reasons why the same accident could not happen to them. They do this by highlighting how details specific to the accident are not present in their own environment. Essentially, they distance themselves from the accident by highlighting how different they are. A reductionist view is only bad divers or instructors get bent and I am not an incompetent diver. Insurance companies might take a negative view if an instructor declares that they have been bent. Moving forward. All models are wrong, some are useful. George Box. The decompression models we have are just approximations. They are close enough because otherwise far more people would be getting bent. However, as they are only approximations, there will be outliers and they shouldn't be taken as the norm. Outliers include those who can miss significant amounts of deco, even after very long decompression obligations have been accrued, and those who get bent even when well inside recognized profiles. Some of these are called undeserved. My own view is that every episode of DCS is deserved. We just don't know what the particular factors were given the massive number of physiological and environmental factors involved. Some, perhaps many, of them we don't even know about yet. Consequently, to improve our availability bias, the industry and those in leadership positions within it need to be more proactive in highlighting that diving contains numerous hazards and that no dive is safe. Safe is a relative concept as the definition of safe covers the absence of risk or harm. If a risk is acceptable, likelihood multiplied by outcome, then the activity is safe. Diving always has potential negative outcomes, including DCS, and even DCS is variable in its outcome. Safe also relates to social safety and the expectation that armchair quarterbacks are not going to pick up the metaphorical rocks and throw them at others because they have the full picture, including the outcome. As many of the readers will know, I'm very passionate about developing a just culture and psychologically safe environment where anyone in the industry can talk about their mistakes, errors, and violations without fear of social punishment. Diving is not a sport for all. As such, we need to prepare divers for when things do go wrong, and they will. We need to be able to predict, detect, and trap errors, and when that doesn't work, we need to be able to fail safely. In my case, there was a chamber nearby and it was open, although I still felt guilty calling someone out at 5:30 in the morning. Questions for you. How many of you carry travel and dive insurance but have no idea where the nearest chamber is when you are on the dive site? How many of you assume that you can get to a chamber quickly? Just because you have insurance, it doesn't mean they can teleport you from your current location to the chamber. Actions on you. The next time you end up making a decision which requires some internal monologue, once you have finished, reflect back on the thought process and the how and or why you came to the decision you did. It is thinking about thinking which helps improve future decision making. In the case of DCS, the anecdotal evidence I have is that the stigma associated with declaring you are bent is significant, and we will try to find numerous reasons to convince ourselves that we are okay, and as such, the bent diver is often the worst person to be involved in the decision-making process. Stigma is externally generated, which means we can do something about it by actively recognizing human fallibility and the variability of human physiology. We must change attitudes towards learning and be curious rather than be judgmental and punitive in nature. create that just culture and a psychologically safe environment so we can tell the context-rich stories and allow learning to happen. Addendum, some people have asked about whether this might be PFO related. In 2009, I found out that I had a 8x12mm PFO, which was fixed with an Amplatzer device in February 2010. Thanks for listening to this podcast. If you'd like to know more about what was discussed in this episode, head over to the Human Diver website at thehumandiver.com, where you will find details about our education programs, the If Only documentary, the book Under Pressure, and the many, many blogs we have published there. If you think others should listen and learn, consider sharing the link. Thank you.